Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. As 2013 draws to a close, we look back at the best films of the year, as determined by Sean Stone, the arts editor of Metroland, the alternative news weekly of New York's Capital Region. Sean, thank you, as always, for joining us to wrap up the year in film. How was this year?
Good.
Good.
Good. Not great, not bad, just good. Plenty of good movies.
Any overarching themes reoccurring?
I guess I was kind of impressed that I'm looking down my list and there's only one sequel, and it's not really a big money sequel. I was sort of happy that the number one movie on my list also made a lot of money and there won't be a sequel. So so it's kind of unusual.
That is, with the current trends. So let's do your top movies. Do you want to start at the bottom or the top?
The bottom.
Okay.
Start at number 10. Rush, which is Ron Howard's drama about Formula One racers in the 1970s. And I think that might be why people didn't go see it, because I don't think people even know what Formula One is.
Right.
That's that very popular European racing circuit that's not really in the United States. I mean, there is one in the United States, but it's not like it used to be because everyone likes NASCAR.
Right. And the title doesn't have much information in it.
No.
I did find myself going, which one is Rush? Oh, right. The Ron Howard movie about Formula One racing.
It's based on real life drivers, the rivalry between a British driver and an Austrian driver played by Chris Hemsworth and Daniel Brühl. And it's an action movie, but it's got a lot of fun character stuff. And Chris Hemsworth's very entertaining and Daniel Brühl is very good. He has a very distinct character and there's some nice supporting performances. And it was a really neat movie. I mean, it's a little bittersweet at the end. And I was really impressed. I mean, Ron Howard's best since a while.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's Rush, directed by Ron Howard.
How's it going so far?
It's fine. Just got a little problem with an Austrian rat and his team of Italian cheats who've destroyed my car.
What are you talking about?
Talking about the race in Spain that I won.
Yeah, in a car, which is not legal.
5/8, 7 inch too wide. You know that doesn't have the slightest effect on speed. But you complained and your team have always leaned on the authorities. Now we've had to rebuild the car and it's become a monster.
At least it's a legal monster.
So you've had to resort to cheating.
You're driving an illegal car and call me the cheat? It's pathetic. Rules are rules.
Yes. And rats are rats. Thank you.
Number 9, we have David O. Russell's American Hustle, which is a method acting orgy.
Sure. You know?
It's a weird movie. It's sort of based, it's set in 1978. They go back and use the 1978 Columbia Pictures logo.
Uh-huh.
And it's a festival of weird hair appliances and crazy clothes, mm-hmm. and period music. And it's about con artists who get caught by the FBI and are forced to do things, con people for the FBI. And it's one of those twisty back and forth. And tonally, it's kind of all over the place because parts of it are deadly serious. And then parts of it are just like almost slapstick. But overall, it's enormously entertaining.
And David O. Russell has assembled a cast of incredible people, many of whom he's worked with before. You've got your Christian Bale, your Bradley Cooper, Amy Adams, Jennifer Lawrence, Jeremy Renner is in it.
Robert De Niro. There's a couple other people. Anthony Zerbe shows up. It's kind of neat. It's a very stylish piece of acting with some very funny stuff in the script. There's a whole thing with them about microwave ovens because they're just being introduced then. That Jennifer Lawrence insists on calling, well, they all insist on calling the science oven.
Oh! Oh!
Another fire!
No, Danny, not that one. That one's empty. We gotta use the big one.
I told you not to put metal in the science oven. What'd you do that for?
Don't make such a big deal. Just get another one.
I don't want another one. I want the one that Carmine gave me.
Oh, Carmine. I want the one that Carmine gave me. Carmine.
Why don't you just marry Carmine? Get a little gold microwave and put it on a chain around your neck. You want to be more like Carmine? Why don't you build something like he does? Instead of all your empty deals, it's just like your science oven. You know, I read that it takes all of the nutrition out of our food. It's empty, just like your deals. Empty, empty. It's not bull. I read it in an article. Look, by Paul Berdour. Bring something into this house that's gonna take all the nutrition out of our food and then light our house on fire? Thank God for me.
It's hilarious.
That is American Hustle, directed by David O. Russell.
And number eight, we have Passion, which barely got released. It's a Brian De Palma remake of a French thriller from a couple of years ago. And it's kind of interesting because I like the French thriller too. But what was interesting about this was he improved the back end of the movie, the second part, the ending. But then, of course, if you're a fan of Brian De Palma and you know his sort of crazy 70s, 80s movies like Sisters and Dressed to Kill, then you know that it's going to go off in a couple of weird directions. There's a point in the movie where it stars Rachel McAdams, and she talks about her twin sister. And I recall there was no twin sister in the French movie, but Brian De Palma likes doubling. And I thought, is he really going to go there? Yes, he does. But it's beautiful and stylish, and there's this sequence at an opera house, which is just spectacular. So I liked it. But if you don't like Brian De Palma, you're not going to like it.
Okay. You're with a disclaimer, eight, Passion, directed by Brian De Palma.
Number seven, Blue is the Warmest Color. This one I was a little lukewarm on when I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And after about 2 weeks, it sort of sank in and I sort of got it. It's the story of this doomed romance between this older French artist and this younger woman who's just starting out. And it's a really good portrait of the rise and fall of a relationship. The cumulative effect is what the director intended. So you should see it.
Okay. Blue is the Warmest Color. It's a French film.
And number six, on the completely opposite end of the scale, we have Spring Breakers, which is Harmony Korine's, and I described it in print as hypnotic, ridiculous, obscene, and hilarious. It's an art film. I mean, you know, it's teenagers on spring break, and they're all running around half naked, but it's goofy, and James Franco plays this sort of gangster rapper, gangster.
Unrecognizable.
Virtually.
But
it's ridiculously funny, and at times it's really scary. And it's not a narrative movie. It's an art film. It's like an object art.
An art film that sounds like it's a National Lampoon film, but isn't.
It isn't. Yes. Yes. It confounds expectations.
Spring Breakers is your number six.
Number five, we have Frances Ha with Greta Gerwig as a sort of late 20-something who belatedly discovers that it's time to grow up.
Yeah, and has a very confused time trying to.
Yes, yes. It's about the third couch when she finally figures out that, hey, you know, this isn't working out for me.
No.
And then there is a hilariously disastrous trip to Paris for a weekend, which is very funny. But she's a dancer who has strengths and weaknesses, and she doesn't realize what they are. She wants the early 20-something experience to never end.
Yep.
And the title gets the payoff on the title is in the last shot of the movie. It's very funny. It was directed by Noah Baumbach, and Gerwig and Baumbach co-wrote it.
That's right.
Very good.
Frances Ha, it's a black and white film by Noah Baumbach.
I want this one moment. It's what I want in a relationship, which might explain why I'm single now. Ha ha. It's kind of hard to. It's that thing when you're with someone and you love them and they know it and they love you and you know it, but it's a party and you're both talking to other people and you're laughing and shining and you look across the room and catch each other's eyes, but not because you're possessive or it's precisely sexual, but because that is your person in this life. And it's funny and sad, but only because this life will end, and it's the secret world that exists right there in public, unnoticed, that no one else knows about. It's sort of like how they say that other dimensions exist all around us, but we don't have the ability to perceive them. That's what I want out of a relationship. Or just life, I guess.
Number four, Fruitvale Station. Mm-hmm. This was probably the most devastating movie I saw this year. It's based on the true story of a man who was killed by the police on New Year's Eve in Oakland, actually the BART police, the Rapid Transit Police, for pretty much no other reason than he was black and in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And it's a wrenching experience, but it's his last day. So it shows his life and his struggles and who he is, and it's moving.
It is. It's really, Michael B. Jordan
yes.
plays the main character. He's fantastic. And the beginning is the end, but still at the end, what happens that you know the whole time, you should know from the news, but also know from the beginning of the movie, is still devastating at the
right.
end of the film.
And Octavia Spencer is his mother, and she's wonderful.
She's always great.
Yeah.
That's Fruitvale Station.
I'm scared.
Scared of what?
I hear guns outside.
You know what, baby? Those just firecrackers. You're safe inside with your cousins.
What about you, Daddy?
Me? Maybe I'm gonna be fine. I'll tell you what, though. When we wake up in the morning, we're gonna play Candyland. And then guess what we're gonna do after that?
Go to the park?
Better.
Toys R Us?
Way better than that.
Why?
I don't know, maybe Chuck E. Cheese.
Really?
I promise. Daddy's gonna give you heck of tokens and we're gonna play all the games, okay? And then we're gonna get your favorite pizza and we'll eat it all up. Even mommy's, because she can't have carbs.
What's a carb?
You ain't gotta worry about that right now.
And number three, comedy, The World's End. To me, this was the best written, the best dialogue script of the year. It was so good. It was written by Simon Pegg and director Edgar Wright. And it's the third film in the trilogy with Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And the co-stars Nick Frost and Martin Freeman. And it's hilarious. It's about friendships and trying to recapture your youth and alcoholism and alien robots
yeah.
who squirt blue liquid when you decapitate them. But it's so witty and it's so smart. And I watched it again just the last weekend just to firm up my idea of its place in the year. And I was just, wow, that's some good writing.
I saw it twice in the theater, which I don't often do with anything because who has time or finances
right.
to go see something twice? But I just loved it and wanted to see it again soon after I'd seen it to catch more of those quick references and jokes. It's
yeah.
so good. The World's End, directed by Edgar Wright.
We had ourselves a little idea.
Did you know?
Yeah, we're going to go back to Newton Haven.
Why?
For some unfinished business.
That's a joke, right?
Five guys, 12 pubs, 50 pints.
60 pints.
Steady on your alky.
I haven't had a drink for 16 years, Gary.
You must be thirsty, then. Look, we can go back, see the guys, chew the fat, and it'll be just like it always was, except this time we are going to finish this thing once and for all.
You have a very selective memory, Gary.
Thanks.
You remember the Friday nights. I remember the Monday mornings.
Yeah, that's why we're going back on a Friday.
Why do you think none of us live in Newton Haven anymore?
Uh-huh.
Because it is a black hole. It's boring. It always was, and it always will be.
It's only boring because we're not there.
It's pointless arguing with you.
Exactly. So come.
And at number two, we have Before Midnight, which is film number three in the Richard Linklater series with Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke as Celine and Jesse. We had Before Sunrise, and then we had Before Sunset. And now they've been married for, 10 years, 11 years. They've got two kids. And that sort of mid-marriage crisis is setting in. And it's that they go away for the weekend. The summer. They're at the vacation on this Greek island, and it's beautiful. And it's the last night. And their friends have set them up to have this romantic getaway. And of course, what happens is they have one of those blowout fights, relationship fights that is just epic, and it's impressive.
Yeah,
it's impressive. And at the end, it's leaves you set up for wanting to know more about their lives. What happens to them 10 years down the road?
What if they end up spending their whole life together? You know?
You're so corny. Sometimes what are you? A 12-year-old girl? First loft? Do you even remember who it was?
Yeah, I do. It was you.
Oh, please, like you're a virgin at 23.
No, you said first love, not first sexual experience, okay?
Okay, fine. Yeah. Like, I'm the first woman you've ever fell in love with?
Yeah, pretty much. One I felt truly connected to? Sure. Okay. What, I wasn't your first love?
No, of course not.
Oh. No, I thought I was.
No! Jesse, stop
it's okay.
this.
It's okay.
It's dumb.
It's not a big deal.
No. Okay, how old are you? Come on.
41. I've loved only you.
Before Midnight, directed by Richard Linklater.
And number one.
Dun-da-da-da!
Gravity.
Okay.
This is Alfonso Cuarón's Lost in Space epic with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. They're out fixing the Hubble telescope, and then something goes wrong, and the space shuttle gets destroyed, and they're floating in space, and they have to figure out a way to get home. It's a really taut movie. You know, it's like 98 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And it's like one thing right after another. And it's imaginative and it's still playing in a few theaters. And I would urge you to go see it in the theater. It's not going to be the same experience at home. I mean, I suppose if you have like a 55-inch 3D setup at home, okay. But you really need to see this in 3D.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be without merit on a small screen, but
right.
but it is a movie theater film
yes.
where all of that space and
no,
in
true.
Space and darkness and then light and action and movement is encompassing and you need to be kind of overwhelmed by it in the cinema.
Yeah, that's why it ended up as number one on my list, because I think people should go out and see movies and this is what the kind of experience you should have. I mean, I think it's funny that you know, how few 3D films, you know, achieve this level. I mean, we get like one a year. You
mm-hmm.
get your Avatar, you get your Life of Pi that creates something spectacular, but this was worth seeing.
Explore, do you copy? Specialist Ryan Stone, I am off structure and I'm drifting. Do you copy? Anyone?
Number one is Gravity. A good year in movies, a great list, varied and interesting from you as always, Sean. Thank you so much, and we will see you in 2014.
You're welcome.
Sean Stone is the arts editor of Metroland. The list we've just discussed can be found online at wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.